The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into First Take. It's Friday. We're feeling good. I'm Charlie Arnold. We got Max Kellerman, Stephen A. Smith in the building. Guys,
morning.
You're both
good
looking
morning.
Very handsome today. Now, Stephen A., 2 weeks ago, you said that the Steelers should retain Big Ben. Should he be willing to take a pay cut? Now, of course, that is easier said than done. But today, here we are sitting, and that is the story. So, guys, let's get right into it. The team announcing yesterday Big Ben is back for the 2021 season. A source telling Adam Schefter that Roethlisberger willingly reduced his salary to $14 million from $19 million in his final contract year and spread the cash payment to 2022. This move now lowers the team's salary cap hit by more than $15 million. Ben Roethlisberger said, "It is my greatest honor to be a Pittsburgh Steeler and give my all for this organization. I am grateful to be at this stage of my career and more than happy to adjust my contract in a way that best helps the team address other players who are so vital to our success. I love this game and I love to compete, and I believe in this team and my ability to deliver when called upon." Okay, Max, we're looking around the division. We've seen a lot this past year. So when you look at the Steelers and Ben Roethlisberger, would you say he is the worst quarterback in the AFC North?
Are you asking me?
Yes, Max, you.
He is the worst quarterback in the AFC North. He's a future Hall of Famer. He can still play, but he's the worst quarterback in the division. I think that's pretty obvious, actually. Look, Lamar Jackson, year before last, was the MVP of the league. I don't think we're going to argue that Ben Roethlisberger is better than Lamar Jackson. I want to talk about Joe Burrow, and then I'm going to get to Baker Mayfield. Joe Burrow last year had a QBR even lower than Baker's. Sorry, than Roethlisberger's. And he got hurt. But a lot of this is projecting the trajectory of a guy's career. Does anyone believe that Joe Burrow is going to be worse in year two than he was in year one? Joe Burrow looked to me like a star from the get-go as a pro. He caps maybe the greatest game in the history of college football, right, with the beginning of a pro career that was totally excellent. That's a star. Then he gets hurt. But what do they say about year two? Year two is the development year. That's when guys get even better. If you had to bet money, who's going to be better this upcoming season, Roethlisberger or Burrow, who'd you put your money on? Roethlisberger? I'll take that bet. I'll give you odds on that bet. And it leaves you with Baker Mayfield. Do you know that Baker Mayfield was top 10 in QBR last year? Roethlisberger was not top 20. Baker Mayfield is a young ascending quarterback, former number one overall pick, who the first time he had stability showed you he's at least a starting quarterback, if not a franchise quarterback, and he's still getting better. He had a better year last year than Roethlisberger, and he's still getting better. The first year with stability, a consistent head coach, players around him, a consistent philosophy, just like that, the guy makes the playoffs and wins a playoff game. Whereas Roethlisberger, Stephen A., we've seen it. He had a little Drew Brees in him this year in the sense that early on, ooh, he's really good. And by the end of this season, he didn't have it anymore. No knock against Roethlisberger, really. He still can play. He's the worst quarterback in the division.
And you know what? You need to be tested. Something the hell is wrong with you. That is just the most asinine thing that has come out of your mouth. And I've heard a lot of asinine things that come out of your mouth.
But
this one beats the cake. Excuse me. Let me get this straight.
That's better than the cliff.
Did I not listen to you? I don't recall interrupting. As a matter of fact, I recall sitting right here. I didn't even take a sip of my tea yet. I actually waited for that, ridiculous
tea,
soliloquy
ahead.
That you
Go
just
ahead.
Gave. Okay. I didn't say a word. Now, let me get this straight. Big Ben Roethlisberger is worse than Baker Mayfield, worse than Joe Burrow, who's a puppy in this business, just arrived, couldn't even get past 10 games without getting hurt. I like Joe Burrow. I think he's got tremendous potential. Baker Mayfield, I give him props where it's due, particularly in the second half of the season. And it does not hurt that they beat the Steelers in the postseason. But better than Big Ben Roethlisberger, I will remind you, I will remind you, Big Ben Roethlisberger did complete 65% of his passes. Baker Mayfield was at 62. Big Ben Roethlisberger did throw 33 touchdowns. Baker Mayfield was at 26. Now, Baker Mayfield threw 8 interceptions. The only way has Ben Roethlisberger threw 10. But the numbers are there. The experience is there. Big game situations, big game pressure is there. We're talking about Big Ben Roethlisberger like he was straight trash, like he was garbage or something. That's not true. We would have liked to have seen them do better over the last 5 or 6 weeks of the season. They nosedive. But this is what happens when you have the worst running attack in all of football. You yourself have lamented their state of affairs with the offensive line. You yourself have lamented the fact that because of it, they can't run block. They don't have a running game as a result. By the way, Baker Mayfield threw 486 passes last year. Ben Roethlisberger was at 608. That's what he did. 608 passes, okay? So what is that? About 122 more passes than Baker Mayfield? It would stand to reason if you don't have a running game, if you don't have good blocking up front, and you throw the football more than 100 times than a Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield might look a little better, and still his numbers weren't necessarily better. And then Joe Burrow, a puppy, just got into the league. This is a man that obviously COVID-19 had something to do with it, and we get all of that. We understand it. But this is a man that got drafted and was sitting with his parents, not his woman, not a bunch of boys, not teammates or stuff like that. He was sitting with his parents. He's a good kid, wholesome kid, so they say. We wish him nothing but the best. All I'm trying to say to you is this. That's the Joe Burrow that we know. He's a puppy. He just got here. And you're sitting there talking about him like he's better than Big Ben Roethlisberger, the quarterback. The question was, Big Ben Roethlisberger, is Big Ben the worst quarterback in the AFC North? Not, what he's going to look like in a year, two years, three years. Right now. Yeah. Wait. Next season hasn't started yet. So all we got to go on.
Well, they're not playing football right now.
And based off of what we have seen, Ben Roethlisberger is the worst quarterback in the AFC North.
That's right. You need
to be tested. Something wrong with you. Something wrong with you.
This is completely rational. It's uncontroversial, really.
Uncontroversial.
Look, I didn't say he'd be the worst quarterback in the NFC East. I didn't say he'd be the worst quarterback in the AFC East.
I know what division the Steelers are in.
East.
You're the one that pays attention to the NFC East.
But in the AFC North, if you say you could have, for this upcoming season, any quarterback, number one, you could take Lamar Jackson. By the way, number two, you could choose between Baker Mayfield and Joe Burrow for the upcoming year. I'm confident in saying Joe Burrow will be better than Roethlisberger this upcoming season. And the last pick would be Roethlisberger. It's not that he can't play. I'm not disrespecting his ability to start in the NFL.
You disrespect elders all the time.
No.
You don't respect your elders, Max.
He's younger than I am.
The evidence is there. You don't respect your elders.
He's younger than me.
Drew Brees just retired. Tom Brady, you're done. Now it's Big Ben Roethlisberger, the worst in the AFC North
because of
Joe. You don't respect your elders. You disrespect your elders. They're not my elders.
Stephen A., I hate to tell you, you and I don't have any elders who still play sports.
I'm talking about the elder statesmen of the National Football
League.
That's all I mean by that.
I'll say this.
You don't respect your elders.
Roethlisberger can still play, but Stephen A., he doesn't lead. And I think the point about the offensive line is a good one. Like, the reason they can't run the ball is because they can't block for the run. The reason he has to get rid of the ball so quickly is because they can't protect for the pass, right? I get that. That's real, and that contributes to it. Roethlisberger was not able to hit guys in stride, to lead guys. I'm talking about with his passing, not his leadership ability. Mm-hmm. Roethlisberger wore down as the season went on. By the end, early on, you're like, ooh, look, he looks really good. And by the end, you say, that guy can't get it done in the biggest games anymore. Huh?
But why did he wear down? Because of the pieces around him.
Well, also because he's 39 years old, coming off a catastrophic injury. I mean, like, this is how it goes. Now, Joe Burrow, Stephen A., has a chance to be an elite player in the NFL. And I expect this up-and-coming season for Joe Burrow to show everyone that he's on his way. And if you survey GM, say, you have one of these two guys for the upcoming season, Roethlisberger or Burrow, I'll bet you most GMs take Burrow.
Mm-hmm. Max Kellerman. Well, how many games did Big Ben Roethlisberger play in last year? Was it 15 games? 15 games. Max,
did he miss one? Six games.
608 pass attempts.
Yeah.
Max, a lot of passes.
That's 40 passes a game.
Mm-hmm.
40.
Yeah.
Because you don't have any help. Okay? In your running game, in your running attack, you don't have any help. So they asked him to throw the football, and still, 65% of his passes completed, 33 touchdowns, just 10 interceptions. I think you're being very hard.
Joe Burrow's going to be a star.
A lack of respect for your elders. A lack of respect for your
Joe
elders.
Joe Burrow's going to be
just
a star. It's going to start
disrespectful.
This year.
Yeah, 39 years old, 608 passes last season. That's the second highest passes in a season of his career. So, guys, let's keep the quarterback talk going because, obviously, Big Ben, he wants to be in Pittsburgh. He's staying there. Deshaun Watson, it is a different story. He is stuck. The word is stuck in Houston. The Texans are adamant they will not trade the 25-year-old despite his desire to go elsewhere. And Jalen Ramsey was once in Deshaun's shoes, as we know. He was on the Huddle and Flow podcast this week and shared his thoughts about Watson's future in Houston.
But I highly doubt he'll ever, you know, suit up in a Texans uniform again. He's very serious. I would say he's very serious. This is a legacy. Yeah, he should be serious.
Stephen A., we're looking at both teams in Texas. Who do you think is more mishandling their quarterback situation? Is it the Cowboys with Dak Prescott, or is it the Texans with Deshaun Watson?
Believe it or not, I think it's the Dallas Cowboys. And the reason that I think it's the Dallas Cowboys is because there's a longer duration, a longer period of time that their actions have been highly, highly questionable, to say the least. For all the things that we want to say about what's going on with Deshaun Watson now in Houston, and there is no denying that. The fact of the matter is, Nick Caserio and Coach Culley just arrived there. And so when you look at it from that perspective, that might have a lot to do with it. You got new blood. They've got to get their feet wet. You got a first-time head coach. You got a first-time general manager. And so obviously they just got on the job, and you don't want to make rash decisions. That could have everything to do with what's transpiring in Houston at that particular moment in time in terms of timing. Jerry Jones has been in Dallas for ages. Stephen Jones has been in Dallas for ages. As a matter of fact, Jerry Jones has 3 Super Bowl championships on his resume, although the last one occurred more than a quarter century ago. And when you look at that fact, along with the fact that there are guys that have played the quarterback positions that didn't do nearly as much for him as Dak Prescott has done, there are individuals who've played other positions that have not contributed to winning as much as Dak Prescott has. And yet, Jerry Jones took care of all of these guys, giving them market value at the offensive line spot, at the running back spot with Ezekiel Elliott, at the linebacker spot with Jalen Smith, the wide receiver spot with Amari Cooper. When you look at the plethora of situations that you can point to where there has been consistent behavior on the part of Jerry Jones to take care of people who have at least tried to assist in taking care of him, and then you've got a quarterback in the name of Dak Prescott who's 42-27 as a starter, who's taken you to the playoffs 2 times in 4 years, who actually won a playoff game for you, and you're playing hardball with him, not even over cash, over years, that speaks to something far more salacious. It speaks to something far more problematic. Let me get this straight. I'm 77 years old, 78. Now I'm telling everybody that I'm looking at my own mortality. My time is running out. Yet I don't want to sign this guy because he only wants to stay for 4 years, not 5. It makes no sense whatsoever. And if this were Tony Romo, for example, it wouldn't be happening. But it's happening with Dak Prescott. And I definitely think when you compare the mishandling of situations, I think Dallas is at the top of the list because their situation with Dak Prescott is so flagrantly disrespectful, it's hard to even talk about it.
The Texans are easily at the top of the list here, Stephen A., and it's a tough list at the top because I agree with what you said about Dak. But you're looking at it one way, just the quarterback and how they're addressing quarterback. But I'm looking at this question about who's mishandling its quarterback situation, not just in terms of how they're handling the quarterback's contract, for example, but in terms of how the decisions they make affect the quarterback and how that affects the franchise. Now, the Cowboys are not a laughingstock in the sense that the entire football world is not saying that's the most dysfunctional franchise. You don't have the icons of the Dallas Cowboys coming out and killing the franchise right now. That's exactly what you have with the Texans. You could point to, well, they signed this guy and that guy and Amari Cooper, but they're giving Dak weapons, partly because they want to find out about Dak. Dak, we know you're good, and they wanted to find out about Jason Garrett, too. Like, is it Dak or Garrett? Why aren't we winning? They decided it's Garrett. Now we have Dak. Now let's see if he can do it. Here are all the weapons. They gave him everything on offense anyone could ask for. it's actually addressing the quarterback situation because you still have questions. You know Dak is good. He's very good. You don't know if he's whether he's going to be great. You know he's not great yet. There is no question about Deshaun Watson. Everyone knows he is great. So, yes, he got paid because when you have a great young quarterback, indisputably, like, great top five player in the league quarterback, that guy always gets paid. So it's not just about the fact that he got the contract and Dak didn't. It's about the way they've handled quarterback and the effect on the franchise. Think about this, Stephen A. And by the way, they were taking weapons away from Deshaun. Yeah, they paid him. They took weapons away. They traded his guy. They didn't do that to Dak Prescott. It got to the point where every J.J. Watt, the greatest defensive player in the history of the franchise, not only apologized to Deshaun, but then signed with another team. Andre Johnson came out and had negative things to say essentially about the franchise as it relates to Deshaun Watson. The Texans now, as a result of their handling Deshaun Watson, are considered the most dysfunctional franchise in the NFL. So you're right in terms of one guy got paid, right? And the other guy's contract's still up in the air. But that's a narrow way of looking at it. When you look at it in its totality, I can't remember a quarterback situation ever in the NFL botched the way the Texans have botched Deshaun Watson.
Well, you got to pay attention to the fact that a lot of these guys that are coming out with their noise, and I'm not saying that disrespectfully. I got a lot of love for Andre Johnson and others. I've known Andre Johnson for years. He's a real good brother. Always happy to see him doing well. But let me make sure we're clear about something here. We've never really heard him say anything until Bill O'Brien left. I'm not saying he has or hasn't, but I don't recall anything that he has said negatively about the franchise until recently. Well, Bill O'Brien's been doing stuff for years that were highly questionable. And now he's hiding in Tuscaloosa behind Nick Saban where all of these questions and all of these problems exist about the Houston Texans. And we're acting like it's just ownership. It's just Cal McNair, you know, and some of the decisions that he's made. But the fact of the matter is Bill O'Brien was running the show. And a whole bunch of stuff that happened was on his watch. And it's amazing as we sit here and we talk and lament the state of affairs with the Houston Texans that his name barely comes up when literally he was at the heart of most of their problems. I'm not saying it was all his fault. I'm saying we don't know because he was right in the middle of it. So he should be called to answer some of those questions instead of being able to hide in Tuscaloosa behind Nick Saban's greatness. That's number one. Number two, having said all of that, here's what I would add to it. Max Kellerman, in the end, you've got a rookie GM and a rookie coach who just arrived. They're looking at a star, and they're trying to hold on for dear life to him. It's stupid for them to do. They don't need to do it. And if they end up not moving Deshaun Watson and holding on to him and forcing him to contemplate missing the season, that would be incredibly irresponsible and stupid on their part, in my estimation. But until that decision is made, we have to at least look at them and say, damn, they just got here. Let them get their feet wet. Let them get, you know, let them learn the business just a little bit to some degree. In the case of the Dallas Cowboys, that's established. That's set. Your culture is what it is. The face of your franchise is Jerry Jones. You know how he does business. But yet, when it comes to Dak Prescott, it seems to be vastly different than how he's treated anybody else. And that happens to be his quarterback. There's something wrong with that picture.
Let me tell you the difference. The Dallas Cowboys still appear on Russell Wilson's list of teams he'd like to be traded to.
Because
the
Dallas money.
Cowboys are still a desirable destination.
Marketability.
And you don't hear a lot of bad-mouthing about Jerry Jones, in fact. They think he's making a mistake in this case and all that. But it's not considered the most dysfunctional franchise in football. Deshaun Watson, with Deshaun Watson in tow, the Texans had a chance to be a very desirable destination in the NFL, and they were not long ago because of Deshaun. They have so alienated their superstar quarterback that everyone wants out, including the quarterback, and no one wants in. That is a worse botching. As I said, I'm trying to think of a team that botched the quarterback situation worse. I guess you might say the Patriots with Tom Brady in retrospect. But, you know, this is as bad as I've ever seen it. The Patriots aren't considered dysfunctional. The Texans, the most dysfunctional franchise in football.
Oh, yeah, I think the Texans are definitely considered problematic just judging by the situation that Deshaun is in, he doesn't even want to play for them this coming year. He's set to make $39 million a year on average as far as his contract is set right now. The franchise tag deadline, gentlemen, is on March 9th. The Cowboys don't have much time if they want to get a long-term deal done with Dak. He will be set to make $37.6 million with this second year being franchise tagged. All right, we're going to wrap it there because we have a big week coming up on First Take coming up on Monday. Look who it is, Lakers owner and president Jeannie Buss joining us to talk about her team's chances of a championship repeat. Then on Thursday, as we approach the anniversary of last year's sports shutdown, Dr. Anthony Fauci stopping by to tell us if sports will ever be the same again. Please tell us they will be.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5X miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
The NFL draft, not too far away, and our expert Todd McShay has put out his latest mock draft. The biggest highlights concerning the quarterbacks, where Todd has four signal callers going with the first four picks. Then he has Alabama's Mac Jones going ninth to the 49ers. So let's go ahead and welcome Todd into the show. How you doing, Todd? Got a busy couple of weeks coming up here, we know. Okay, so Todd, you have a BYU quarterback, Zach Wilson, being drafted with the second overall pick. Which team do you think is most in need in making that pick for Wilson?
Well, it could be the Jets. We have to figure out what's going on with Sam Darnold. And are they going to move him? If they move him, then I think the Jets stay at two and they take Zach Wilson. Regardless of what happens, Zach Wilson, in my opinion, is the second best player in the draft and should be the second overall pick. Could it be Atlanta moving up from 4 to 2? Could it be Carolina moving up from 8 to 2? And we just have to see what the Jets wind up doing. But that's the biggest domino that has to fall, and that's really where the draft starts. We all know Trevor Lawrence is going to go number one overall to Jacksonville. But the Jets kind of, they hold this card, and they have four first-round picks in this year and next year combined. So are they going to try to move out and get more picks? Or are they going to try to move Sam and get more picks from that? How do they handle the whole process, I think, is going to be the most intriguing factor.
You got the Panthers trading up from 8 to 3 to go after Justin Fields. Talk to me about Justin Fields and how we're supposed to feel about it right now. Once upon a time, there were people that were questioning, even though we all knew it was Trevor Lawrence, they were saying, Justin Fields, Trevor Lawrence. I mean, look at them when they went at it against one another. I mean, they're in the same level. All of a sudden, not only is that not the case, but now we've got Zach Wilson considered a better prospect than Justin Fields. What's going on with him?
You know, everyone's yelling at me about Justin Fields. I've got him at 3 overall, and I've got a team trading up from 8 to give away a lot of picks to go get him. I think he's so physically gifted. I think he has really good football intelligence. The thing that's tough to figure out is when you look at this past season, when Indiana and Northwestern and Alabama threw different schemes at him, just trying to get off of what that primary read was. That does, again, it's not about football football intelligence. It's about what the scheme, you know, he was trying to do within his own scheme. And Ryan Day is one of the best quarterback coaches and offensive coaches in all of college football. And I think he has such precise, you know, decisions in terms of what his quarterback wants to do and where to go with the ball. So I think that's going to be the transition for him. But I think Justin Fields is supremely talented mentally and physically.
I thought I was going to be slick, Todd, with Trey Lance is going to go higher than people think, but now he's top four, right? These quarterbacks every year, it's like you go through all these, you jump, and then by the end, it's like, yeah, it's going to be quarterback. But Mac Jones, you have at 9. And we know Todd McShay recently compared him, doesn't mean he's saying he's going to be as good as Brady, but compared him in certain respects to Tom Brady. Mel Kiper Jr., obviously, talking to Todd McShay. I know you and Mel agree about everything. So I was wondering, do you also agree about this, about Mac Jones being Tom Brady-like in certain respects?
Listen, I've spent a lot of time with Mac Jones and Steve Sarkisian, the offensive coordinator, and I'll tell you this story. Going back to I think it was the second or third game of the year against Missouri. All Coach Sark was saying is, we just need Mac Jones to stay in his lane. We've got two wide receivers at that time that are going to be first-round picks. We got three guys in the offensive line that are going to get drafted. We've got a running back in Najee Harris who's going to get drafted probably in the first round. He just has to stay in his lane. The second game we did in the middle of the season, he said, you know, I'm starting to install more, and he's showing me more. And by the third game that we did at the end of the year, Sark said to us, he has installed more with Mac Jones than he had with any other college quarterback. So that's the mental aptitude that he has. So he's able to process, he sees things quickly, he's very good inside the pocket, and he's very accurate, but he's not mobile. And, you know, in this game right now in the NFL, you've got to have some more mobility to be one of these elite top guys. But it won't surprise me at all if Mac Jones goes on to have a great career in the NFL.
2018, Baker Mayfield number one. You had Josh Allen get picked top 10. You had Lamar Jackson get picked 48 right at the end of the first round. How does this quarterback class compare to that quarterback class in your estimation?
I think it's very similar. It's a good point, Stephen. I really think it's similar. You have five guys that could go in the top 20, and we all missed on Lamar. I don't care what anyone says. We missed on him because he went late in the first, and it was a surprise even at that point that Baltimore traded back up to go get him. But I think when you look at the talent of this group, Trevor Lawrence is once in a decade type of talent. Zach Wilson is so underrated, and the other three guys belong somewhere in the middle, and I'm sure one of them will wind up exceeding expectations.
Hey, Max. Meantime. Max, do me a favor. Let me chime in real quick with this follow-up. 2017, Todd, Chicago moved up to draft Mitchell Trubisky, bypassed Deshaun Watson, bypassed Patrick Mahomes. Could you educate us about how much of a role such a colossal mistake by a franchise plays as future drafts approach? Because I'm thinking that kind of stuff remains in people's eyes, in people's minds' eyes, and these guys, these executives are scared to death of making the wrong call. Could you speak to that real quick?
Yeah, I mean, they are, but you got to go out and you got to get your guy. You got to figure out who do you like and what you want to do offensively, and can you develop this guy and make him the player that you want him to be. And so, Trubisky was a big mistake, and I think part of it really was the lack of experience that he had coming out of that system in North Carolina.
Yeah, when I look at this draft, Todd, I wonder, because I think about last year, and Justin Herbert several years ago, it was like, hey, tank for Herbert. Remember that a little bit? And he was supposed to be the best guy. And then he didn't quite develop the way we thought, so he was the third taken, but seems to me to have the highest upside. I mean, he has amazing talent. Who in this draft has that kind of high upside that maybe, that obviously not Trevor Lawrence, where people might be like, oh, wow, it was turned out to be that guy in terms of the upside of his talent?
I think Kyle Pitts. The tight end from Florida. I mean, he's Darren Waller, and no one really knows Darren Waller because he plays for the Raiders, but he's had 197 catches the last 2 years, and Pitts can play inside, he can play in the slot, he can play out wide. He's a matchup piece that you're really looking for in the NFL today.
Can I chime in here?
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
You know, so much has been made about this cat, Chase, out of LSU, wide receiver, sat out last year because of COVID for LSU. But then we saw Devontae Smith burst onto the scene and be such an elite dude at the wide receiver spot, something spectacular, Heisman Trophy win, all of that stuff. Where are you in terms of Chase being picked ahead of Devontae Smith, even though Devontae played this past season and Chase did not?
It's tough. It really is. These two guys are very different in terms of the style of play. Chase is bigger, more physical. He might have better speed, but Devontae is Marvin Harrison. He doesn't look the part. He has skinny legs. He's not able to run down the field as fast, but he separates and knows how to get open, and I just love his style of play. So I have almost identical grades on these two guys.
All right, Todd, thanks so much for the insight. You're going to be a busy man, as we said, these next few weeks. Also, tonight, you got a special Sports Center coming up. You're going to be breaking down the first round of the NFL draft. That will be on ESPN2 tonight at 10 o'clock. So thanks for joining us. We appreciate you.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/firsttake. That's amazon.com/firsttake to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
The All-Star Game this weekend going down in Atlanta, and the teams are set after last night's draft with team captains LeBron James and Kevin Durant assembling their squads. LeBron taking Giannis with his top pick, Durant taking teammate Kyrie Irving with his. Now LeBron rounded out his top five with Steph, Luka, and Jokic. Durant, he will not be playing in the game, so joining Kyrie in the top five. Joel Embiid, Kawhi Leonard, Bradley Beal, and Jason Tatum. So we're looking back at the first half of the season, and Stephen A., I ask you, who do you say was the most impressive team thus far?
I would have to, in all honesty, say the Utah Jazz, simply because we didn't see them coming. Remember, even though it was an incredible playoff series that they had against the Denver Nuggets that went seven games, even though they surrendered a 3-1 lead, if I remember correctly, and Donovan Mitchell and Jamal Murray just put on a show for the ages. And the one thing we lamented about is that it was in the first round instead of a conference finals or an NBA finals. The bottom line is the Utah Jazz went home in the first round. Even though it was bubble play, that's still what happened. And when you look at this team, you've always known it's a quality team because I happen to believe that Quinn Snyder is an exceptional coach and his staff does an exceptional job. But they're good enough to be interesting. They're good enough to get to the postseason. And then they're just not good enough to extend them their season beyond the first round of the playoffs. You don't get that impression now. They were 27-9 or so. They're a top five defensive team. They're a top five offensive team. They're the leading three-point shooting team in the entire National Basketball Association. They share the basketball. They're selfless. They trust one another. They move the basketball. They play together. They play unselfishly. They play defense. You've got defense on the perimeter in Royce O'Neal. You got defense on the interior in Rudy Gobert whenever he's not going up against Joel Embiid. And then everybody else seems to matriculate to the circumstances and ultimately end up handling their business collectively. In the end, the Utah Jazz give you every impression that you are going to have to deal with them, that the road to the finals is going to have to go through Utah. It's going to have to go through Salt Lake City. It's not going through the Los Angeles, per se, unless Anthony Davis finds a way to get himself 100% healthy. I don't think any of us saw that coming. We suspected it would be Denver with the Joker and Jamal Murray. We wondered aloud whether or not it would be the Clippers redeeming themselves after collapsing against the Denver Nuggets in the Western Conference Finals. We even entertained the possibility of Portland because of C.J. McCollum and Damian Lillard, along with adding Covington to the crew, assuming a healthy Nurkic would be there, and of course Carmelo Anthony making his contribution. We didn't see the Utah Jazz coming like this, but they have arrived. They've put the basketball world on notice, and now they've got a chip on their shoulders too. First, it was the officials, and now it's LeBron James and them laughing on television last night about how, I'm sorry, it's Utah. Those are great players, and you respect them, but it's Utah. You're always going to pick them last. Even when Karl Malone and John Stockton were playing, you're always going to pick them last. These are the kind of things that will motivate them, and I think we need to keep our eyes on them and keep a strong watch on them.
Stephen A., what's the phrase you use when describing Steph Curry and Klay Thompson in the backcourt?
The greatest, Steph Curry, I say he's the greatest shooter ever created by God. He's the greatest shooter in all of mankind. And when it comes to those two, I say it's the greatest shooting backcourt in the history of basketball.
Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving and James Harden are the greatest offense ever created in the history of basketball. Everything you say about the backcourt in Golden State applies to these guys on offense. And Joe Harris is one of the, best three shooters in the NBA? He's an historically great outside shooter. And all he's got to worry about is shooting that shot. This Nets team has been the most impressive by far. Utah's been impressed. The Lakers, until, AD went down, were impressed. The Clippers have been impressed. This Brooklyn Nets team is the most impressive by far. When they made the trade for Harden, the Lakers weren't sweating it. They were asking Lakers players, Lakers fans. They were like, yeah, but we're okay. And none of us really thought, now, the Lakers have something to worry about. But let's just be honest right now. If you put everyone on a lie detector test right now in the NBA and said, who's going to win the chip? The Nets would be overwhelming favorites at this point. People are saying the Lakers, out of respect for the defending champs, out of the idea that when AD gets back, they're different, they have size, they have defense. The way this Brooklyn Nets team has played together has outstripped even the very high expectations. They even got the defense together. Remember, it was the worst defensive efficiency in the history of basketball, those first bunch of games. In the history of basketball. And now they're mid-pack. They went on a West Coast road trip, by the way, with two of their three guys, and blew through the West Coast. Blew through the Western Conference, the best teams in the Western Conference. And they haven't even been, even if they had all their guys, they've only played, five games together, all the big three? They haven't had a chance to develop chemistry and get in a rhythm yet. This Nets team, the fact that they've already done what they've done, and let's be honest, the key to it is Kyrie and Harden existing, coexisting in the backcourt. They've done an amazing job. This Nets team is already the most impressive team in the NBA. They're the scariest team in the NBA. They are going to have the greatest offense in the history of American team sports by far by the end of this season. And the answer is the Brooklyn Nets.
Well, I would say this to you, Max Kellerman. I'm not refuting anything about how potent their offense is. Remember, I have the Brooklyn Nets as the favorites to win it all. Let's be very, very clear about that. I'm not refuting that. But to answer the question directly, in terms of most impressive team of the NBA's first half, it was a roller coaster ride. First, they started off and they were struggling miserably defensively. Kyrie skipped some games because he, needed his break. James Harden arrived there about 9-10 games in after what was going on in Houston. Kevin Durant was healthy, but then COVID came in, and then he came back, and then another COVID incident, and then he came back, and then there was the hamstring injury. So what I'm saying to you is that, yeah, they're managing to go on a winning streak now, and they're within a half game of the Philadelphia 76ers. They won 10 of their last 11 games. James Harden is a leading candidate for league MVP honors. All of this stuff is going on. But in terms of most impressive team, I'm thinking from start to the All-Star break, models of consistency, very little drama, just consistent performances of excellence. I'm saying when you look at the Utah Jazz thus far, that doesn't mean they're going to win the chip, but when you look at them thus far, they are clearly the most impressive team because they've shocked the basketball world thus far with what they've done, and they've been models of consistency doing it, and they've done it in a way that's been devoid of the quote-unquote creme de la creme superstar. They just play together, and they play the right way on both ends of the floor, night in, night out. I got to give credit where credit is due in that regard.
A global pandemic may be the best chance to stop the Nets at this point. I mean, there's a vaccination for that now. They already put that defense together, Stephen A. I thought, you know, they're going to have to make a move to give DeAndre Jordan some help in the paint, right? They started putting it together even without that, just with this roster.
Doesn't matter.
Defensively.
Doesn't
defensively,
matter.
They're middle of the pack. They're kind of solid already. They
Doesn't
haven't
matter.
Even played together yet.
They're not getting out of the East without Kevin Durant. With Kevin Durant, they'll win it all. Utah Jazz may be standing.
Without
there.
Kevin Durant, yep. The Western
guys,
Conference couldn't stop them.
We got to go, but models of consistency, yes, the Jazz are 27-9, leading the NBA, yet Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert were the last two players on the board last night, so they will definitely be looking for their respect. Talk about some motivation.